Okay, I'm going to call the Senate State Affairs to order. The time is 3:50. Today is Tuesday, April 3rd. And with us is Senator Coghill, Senator Wilson, Senator Egan, and Senator Giesel will be here shortly, and myself, Chairman Meyer. And also Christine Marsigan, my trusty staff, is here, as well as Chris Dickrell, who's with Senate Records, and our LIO monitor, Eileen Keim. Is that right? Okay, good. Okay, so we got quite a few bills on tap for this afternoon. First one will be Senate Bill 118, the disclosure of customer information. If Senator Wilkowski and his trusty staff want to join us. Senate Bill 118, disclosure of customer information, sponsored by Senator Wilkowski. Floor is yours, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm a state senator representing East Anchorage and Jaybear. And this bill stems from our constitutional obligation. In Article 1, Section 22, the Constitution says, "The right of the people to privacy is recognized and shall not be infringed. The legislature shall implement this by statute." And so this statute is seeking to protect personal information that Internet websites collect about us on a daily basis. The Internet has fundamentally changed our world, but virtually every website you click on, every product that you buy, every medical illness that you research, every political article you research, every religious site you visit is being recorded, collected, and sold. And there's little to stop data brokers from using the information they gather from us in whatever way they please. There is a gentleman named Jeff Chester. He's a privacy advocate and director of the Center for Digital Democracy. And I think he summed it up very well. He said, because there are no online privacy laws in the United States, there's no stop sign, there's no slow sign, there's no crossing guard, the message is anything goes. And we've seen that in recent months with the Facebook Cambridge Analytical issue and just the other things that we're hearing about massive collections of information on American citizens. Websites use up to 100 tracking tools to collect personal information. Americans have lost jobs and been denied mortgages when data brokers shared incorrect information, and scammers use a data brokerage list to target vulnerable populations like seniors. Many mobile apps share location information and phone numbers. Women and children have been hurt or killed when location data was shared with abusers. This bill seeks to make the Internet more transparent. It simply requires that website owners and online services that they tell people what personal information they are collecting and who it is being provided to. And I would point out that similar legislation has passed the Illinois State Senate and is actually, my staff checked, and was in third reading in their state house today. Canada and the United Kingdom both have laws that allow consumers to access or to find out what data is being shared about them. The European Union passed regulations in 2016, which goes into effect next month, which are similar to this bill. They actually go further than this bill because they have what they call right to be forgotten, which is the right for the consumer to ask websites and the data brokerage firms to actually delete the data that they've collected on them. We're not going quite that far, but this would put us among the leaders of the nation in protecting Alaskans' internet privacy. And I'll stop right there. My staff is here to answer any questions that I cannot. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Is there any initial questions? If not, are you prepared to do a sectional for us?
Absolutely.
Okay. If you could, when you're ready, put your name on the record and proceed. Go ahead.
For the record, my name is Elise Sornberg, intern to Senator Wilkowski. Thank you, Chair Meyer and the committee. So Section 1 just titles the legislation the Right to Know Act. Section 2 enumerates legislative findings relating to Alaska's constitutional right of privacy and detailing the importance of transparency and security for consumers and business practices related to personal digital data. Section 3 starts to get into more of the meat of the bill. The first part of that 45.48800 requires the owner of a commercial internet website or commercial online service to notify customers of their information sharing practices. It outlines what information the owner must include in the notification. 810 requires the owner of a commercial internet website or commercial online service, if requested by the customer, to provide the customer any information shared about them in the previous 12 months, and outlines which information the owner must provide to the customer. The next section, 820, identifies the categories of personal information that the owner needs to disclose. 830 outlines different exceptions to the disclosure requirement. Section 45.48840 allows the customer to recover damages if an owner violates the right to know. And 850 outlines how the right to know interacts with existing privacy regulations on the state and federal level. The last section in Section 3 provides definitions. Section 4 of the bill establishes that this is only applicable to data collected after the effective date.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Questions? Senator Coggett.
If I could ask Senator Wilkowski, was this modeled after some model legislation, or is this taken from one of the other states that are considering this? I'm just thinking about the difference between maybe us and other states on our constitutional privacy parts. I guess the first question is, was it modeled after a model legislation?
Thank you, Senator, through the chair. I don't know that there's model legislation in this area, but it is very similar to what is being done in Illinois. That's where we sort of got the inspiration to do this.
Senator Coggett.
So on the application of it, have you heard any of the struggles on applying? For example, there's going to have to be a regulatory agency that now is able to function. So tell me how it's housed and how it would be housed in Alaska and how an individual might make the contact, say, I want that information, and I have these people that tell me I can do that.
Thank you, Senator, through the chair. We're not contemplating at this point a regulatory agency that would oversee this. We are contemplating that individuals would have a cause of action, a legal right to sue. It's in page 5, lines 26 through 30. So if there was a violation, then there would be a penalty, a monetary penalty of $5,000 or whatever the actual damages were, whichever is greater, plus attorney's fees. So it's not something that we would anticipate would have a fiscal note. It's not something that we would anticipate the government would be overseeing and enforcing, but it would have that private right to action, which we think would lead to enforcement.
So, Mr. Chairman, so my expectation then, it would be something you'd have to take to a court. It would be a civil issue at this point.
Yes.
So an individual has an audit. I'm just thinking out loud here because I haven't actually studied this out, but I appreciate you bringing it forward. It looks to me like this would be a David and Goliath type of thing, no matter what we did, right?
Thank you, through the chair. It is definitely a David versus a multi-billion dollar Goliaths that are out there. And we actually printed out some of the terms of service, for example, Google. There are many companies have them. But Google's, for example, doesn't tell you. We'd be happy to provide that to the committee. They just don't tell you exactly what they do. They say, well, We may sell your data. We may take it. We're not going to tell you exactly what we're going to take. We're not going to tell you who we're going to provide this to, but we may go ahead and do it. And so it would require some more specificity.
Anything else, Senator Carlin?
That's first blush, but I'll just ponder that.
I want to welcome to the committee Senator Giesel. Welcome, Senator Giesel. Other questions? Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Senator, through looking over this bill, I'm trying to see similar, Senator Cockell, the practicality of how this would be enforced. Are we just looking at all Internet transactions that happen in the state of Alaska, just Alaska-based companies, and would that sort of limit entities that would like to have traffic go through Alaska without having this more of a sort of a federal guideline instead of just a state issue?
I can respond to that through the chair, Senator Wilson. This is specific to commercial internet websites or commercial online services. That would be any commercial internet website or commercial online service. So a commercial online service would be something you subscribe to, like Netflix or Amazon Prime. And so that would apply to all internet providers. However, I feel like this is about the direction where things are heading anyway, because the internet is an international medium. So websites that are operating in Europe currently will have to provide a lot of this information under the new European Union regulations. And we just want to make sure Alaskans have that privacy protection and that ability to know what data is being stored and collected about them.
Okay. Senator Wilson, go ahead.
I guess I have trouble sort of being an international, have entities. I don't understand how we may go after a company in Brazil or Costa Rica to enforce items of this nature when those entities aren't based in the U.S. or have commerce. So I guess that's sort of where I'm having trouble with this piece of legislation is sort of how we're going to force or how to make sure that we're not, like I said, stifling some of our local folks or just people who may not want to have traffic come through Alaska anymore.
Senator Wilson, through the chair, if you take a whole semester of this in law school about how you exactly what you just asked, and there may be companies that you can't get a hold of. There may be websites that is true. That'd be up to the person who wants to enforce that, the lawyers. I think if you come into the state of Alaska, with your website, you are subjecting yourself to the jurisdiction of the state of Alaska. But I do think it's important to remember that this is something that is going to be done in the European Union. This is something that's going to be done in Canada, very similar. Something is already being done in the United Kingdom. So I think the vast majority of the websites that are out there are probably the ones that people go to on a regular basis are large, things like CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, Yahoo. They're United States-based. If there is a website that is collecting your information in some country that we don't have any sort of treaties with, you're probably not going to be able to sue them. That's probably accurate.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. I guess that begs the question then, would this legislation be better done at the national level rather than at the state level?
Yes, Senator, absolutely. No doubt. We'd rather see something being done on the national level. The problem is it's not being done. And we've had the Internet now for a couple decades, and there's certainly been legislation sponsored in Congress to do that. There's legislation sponsored in other states. And so it's really evolving at the state level just simply because it's not happened at the federal level. And also, I think Alaska is really, we have a very strong right to privacy, an explicit right to privacy, which many, if not most states, do not have. So, and an obligation to enforce that by statute. So that's the reason we're bringing this forward.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Rulkowski. Other questions? Senator Carpenter.
This is one of the places where Senator and I really agree, and so I think the thing that I immediately think about, and maybe you can clarify, if enough states do this, it probably would allow it to be a class action potential if there was no response to the big industry, that enough states would probably put a penalty in that would make it worth a combined effort, from what I can see. So I can see the value of putting in this in our statute to show the industry that they have to respect the consumers, basically. So I see that as a big step. I haven't looked at all the language in here on what you could require, and I would have to go back and think through some of those things. But am I right in my thinking on that?
Oh, Senator, through the chair, absolutely. And that is, I think, one of our thoughts. This would be groundbreaking legislation. It has not passed, as far as I know, in any other state in the nation. It is probably going to pass in Illinois in the next few days. But it is one of those things where if you pass it in one state, and I think from my understanding of how this works, it will not be hard for these companies to comply with. The ones that collect this data, the data brokers, they're, I think, pretty easily going to be able to provide this information. But absolutely, if one state passes this, I think you'll see a ripple effect, a domino effect all across the other states. Because if you got to do it for one state, you're setting up that infrastructure. You're really going to be able to provide it for every other state in the country.
Go ahead, sir.
So you mentioned, you quoted a privacy advocate. Is that individual used as a backup to other places? Is this international discussion, or is it somebody that we can go to for resources?
Thank you, to the chair, Senator. I think that might be in your. I don't know if that's in your packet or not, but it was an article in NPR and National Public Radio. So I think it's fairly credible. It's the Center for Digital Democracy. There are a number of organizations. I believe we have someone online who will provide some short testimony. But there are definitely people and organizations that are very concerned about privacy. A lot of libertarian organizations are concerned. You know, from working on this sort of legislation for many years, Senator, that this is something that people all across the country, when you start talking about getting into their private information and selling it and accessing all sorts of things, that concerns people, and there are definitely organizations. But we could reach out to this person if you'd like and try to put them in touch with you or the committee.
At least to me personally, maybe to us as a – but I have not read all the research that you brought with the bill. I will – make sure that I consider it. This is still a new topic to me, but not a new subject, just a new specific topic.
Yeah. Actually, Senator Wilkowski, if you could provide that to my office, mm-hmm. and we'll get it to all the committee members. So, Senator Wilkowski, do we run the risk, though, of some of these companies just bypassing Alaska? If we're the only state that has this, yeah. this law?
Yeah. Thank you, Senator. I don't think so. I think I don't know that they'd be able to just block out Alaska because of that, but I don't know that they're structured in a way to be able to do that. But it really is not, and I think you'll hear this from the testimony, it's really not difficult information for these companies it's not hard for them to provide. And you know, the hope is, like Senator Cockhill said, you really want to start a domino effect. You really want to provide a good law and get something on the books somewhere. So other states can take a look at it, and ideally it would be on the national level, but we just haven't seen that happen yet. But I don't think there's a risk for that, or if there is, I think it would be extremely small. I just don't know how companies would be able to block traffic going to a specific state.
Okay. Additional questions? Senator Wilkowski, you said you had somebody to testify on this, but I don't see anyone. So...
Senator.
Yes.
Chair Meyer. Yes. We did have someone lined up to testify, but he let us know at the last moment that he could not. There is, however, a written testimony from him that is on basis. So.
Okay. Very good. Alrighty. Okay. So, tell you what. Why don't we leave public testimony open, and if he can testify, maybe on our next meeting, Thursday, we can come back to it then. Okay. With that, then let's go ahead and set this aside for now. We'll leave public testimony open. Go on to the next bill. Thank you, Senator Rutkowski. Thank you. Okay, so with that, let's looks like we're taking up tobacco taxes. House Bill 96. Is that right? You're okay if we add a dollar pack? Senator or Representative? Okay, so House Bill 96 is taxes, deductions, fees, tax staff discount. Representative Thompson's bill, and he's got his trusty staff, Forrest Wolf. And Representative Thompson, if you would introduce us to your bill, please.
Thank you. I'm Steve Thompson. I represent House District Number 2 up in Fairbanks. Chair Meyer and committee, I really appreciate you hearing House Bill 96. House Bill 96 came about because 4 years ago we passed House Bill 306, which addressed indirect expenditures, and it was passed and it's in the statutes now. Indirect expenditures are discounts that corporations can take against their state tax. It's reductions in fees and things like that that we don't ever see. They do not. Those fees never show up in the budget. We don't see them. So House Bill 306 makes it required that the Treasury Department every 2 years must make a report showing all of the foregone revenue that the state didn't receive due to indirect expenditures and discounts and reductions in fees. They make that report, and they turn it over to Ledge Finance, and they then produce a report that's passed out to all of the legislators so we can see the lost fees that we don't receive. House Bill 96 addresses four of those indirect expenditures, and it will save the state or bring back to the state over $350,000. And my staff will give you a breakdown of the four indirect expenditures that this one addresses.
Okay, very good. Is there any initial questions for Representative Thompson? Okay, seeing none. Okay, Forrest, if you'll put your name on the record, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Meyer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Forrest Wolf, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. Excuse me. And we'd like to hear you all, thank you all for hearing House Bill 96 today. House Bill 96 repeals or removes four minor indirect expenditures from state law, which would provide a modest amount of increased revenue to the state of Alaska. The first is it removes the deduction of federal taxes from the adjusted gross income when calculating the state tax collected on gambling aboard large cruise ships. The second is a provision that allows an investigation of expense under the Alaska Small Loans Act to replace a fee required under the Alaska Businesses License Act. Third, it removes a 0.4% deduction from the tobacco tax for the expense of accounting and filing that tax return each month. And finally, the fourth one is it repeals a discount on cigarette tax stamps, which was originally intended to be compensation for physically affixing these stamps to the packages themselves. According to the fiscal note provided by the Department of Revenue, it's estimated that HB 96 will increase revenue by at least about $339,500 in fiscal year 19, of which about $220,000 will go to the unrestricted general fund. In this time of fiscal and financial instability and economic hardship, the state needs to find increased revenue wherever it can, and HB 96 is a step in the right direction, and we'd appreciate your support. Also with us today, I have Ken Alper from the Department of Revenue to answer any more technical questions you might have and provide some of the history to why some of these indirect expenditures were initially enacted in state law. So.
Okay, very good. Are there questions? I have a question, and that is, why does this generate revenue to the state? Because we're no longer paying these outfits that stamp our cigarettes? Help me out here, Representative Thompson.
Mr. Chair, we have quite an amount of money that we pay yearly to cigarette companies to affix the tax stamp on the bottom of the pack of cigarettes. That was originally put in place so that they could pay for the equipment that it was going to take to place those stamps on there. I think they've paid for that equipment many times over now. So that's the largest amount of the money that we're talking about. Some of the discounts for filling out the forms and different ones, those amount to some money also, not as much each. The cruise ship tax, Mr. Alper can probably address that one a little bit better. They have no idea how much money, more money that will bring in, but it will bring in money. But that's an indeterminate amount at this time.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be a good question for Mr. Alper. Help me out here again, Representative Thompson. Does each tobacco company then stamp this, or is it just like one distributor of all the tobacco brands?
I believe they have one machine, and everybody has to go through them and place those on there. I'm sure you've seen them. It's that little stamp that's right there.
Okay.
We give them discounts for placing it on there, and we also pay part of the money for them, to affix it. We pay them money to do it, which, as far as I'm concerned, they can add that to the cost of a pack of cigarettes. It's an indirect tax, if you want to call it that.
Can I quote you on that?
Pardon?
Can I quote you on that? Okay. So we don't really know if the equipment has been paid for. We just are speculating that whatever it costs, that over the years they've more than paid for it.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, if there is a cost that's going to happen, they will have to have that added to the cost of a pack of cigarettes. I don't see any problem with that. Okay. I don't think it would be a lot per pack, but this is a fund that we continually allow them to take a very large discount off corporate taxes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Other questions? Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, just a comment. Thank you, Representative Thompson, for bringing this forward. I look at that indirect expenses report, and I can hardly believe that we have some of those in place. So thank you for identifying at least four of them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thompson, doesn't that stamp on there prove that it's Alaska? I mean, I have a couple of friends that buy from tribes in Washington. There's no stamp on there.
Cigarette, through the chair. Senator Egan, cigarettes, if they're sold commercially in the state of Alaska, must have that tax affixed to them.
I understand that.
If they don't have that stamp, they're liable for a very large fine, and it could be very, very large fine, because they have to have those on there for commercially sold in Alaska cigarettes. I guess you can order them from places in the lower 48, places down there that sell them that are Indian, whatever you call
right.
them. Tobacco places. If you get them through the mail that way, I assume that that's a way around it.
Mr. Chair, just one more. So how about cruise ships? Do they have little tax stickers on their cigarettes?
Through the chair, Senator Egan, that might be a good question for Mr. Alper.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Additional questions? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Thompson, how do other states deal with this?
Chair, I'm not sure how other states deal with it. I know that there's a big movement across the nation to address indirect expenditures that they have in those states. My staff member back 4 years ago when we did this, Brody Anderson, ended up being invited and had his way paid to Washington, D.C. to address a big group of people from different states that were addressing indirect expenditures. And so everybody's interested in this across the nation, because indirect expenditures don't show up in a budget. Nobody really sees how much money that they don't, that are foregone. And so this is a big, big deal nationwide.
Okay. Thank you. How long have we been doing this, Representative Thompson?
Mr. Alper might have better information on that.
Okay. Okay, very good. Any other questions for the sponsor of the bill? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much, Representative Thompson. Mr. Elper, your name's been dropped here quite a bit. could you please join the State Affairs Committee meeting? And I think you heard some of the questions committee members have had. Would you like to put your name on the record and address some of the questions?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, good afternoon. My name is Ken Alper. I'm the director of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. And I believe this is my first time ever in the Senate State Affairs Committee. So if you have a merit badge, I'll you know where to find it. There are four items in Representative Thompson's bill. Three of them relate to the Tax Division and the Department of Revenue. I can't really speak to the insurance component of the bill. I believe our fiscal note had that portion of it indeterminate as well. The cruise ship piece, the cruise ship gambling tax was a component of the initiative that put the $50 head tax on cruise ships in the 2006 election. Like all initiatives, it was imperfect statutory construction. It never went through a committee process and the various edits and amendments. And my understanding of that, there's a little bit of a circular logic. Typically, a state tax is taken before a federal tax. So if you're subtracting the federal tax from your income for purposes of calculating the state tax, first off, it's unnecessary and not typical, and second, it creates, as I said, circular logic because you're deducting the federal tax before you calculate something that's then the tax itself is deducted before paying any federal taxes. So to a certain extent, it's cleanup. We frankly have no idea. We don't get that deep into the books of those the large cruise companies who file the gambling tax. It's a 33% of net profits tax on the activities while they're in state waters in Alaska. And that tax overall brings in about $6 million per year, general funds. It's one of our 10 what we call excise taxes, one group within the tax division that handles a lot of the smaller taxes, the cruise ship head tax, the cruise ship gaming tax, alcohol, tobacco, motor fuels, mining, the tire tax, the vehicle rental tax.
Right.
So, and the marijuana tax, our new one. And they've also absorbed the remnants of the film tax program, which we still have some credits out there in the world that are being worked through in the excise taxes dealing with them. So the two other items relate to the tobacco tax. The one is a discount on the filing itself. It's a percentage of your tax that you get to take off, more or less a timely filing fee. It's not unusual out in the taxing world to have a timely filing discount. It's not really necessary through a family business. I pay sales taxes to the city and borough of Juneau. They have one. It's $100 a quarter, I think, we get to take. We have a couple of others in statute. There's another one in the motor fuel tax. So this item that is in House Bill 96 would simply eliminate the 0.4% discount for filing your taxes online, for dealing with the paperwork, essentially. And for the record, it's not really paperwork anymore, and other legislation passed this body 2 years ago that mandates electronic filing for almost all of these small taxpayers in Alaska. So the great bulk of these folks are filing online. The one that gets the most attention and curiosity is the sticker discount. Representative Thompson conveniently had a visual aid. Those stickers are not going away. We purchased them. And it's an unusual tax because it's pre-sold to the wholesalers, the distributors of tobacco in Alaska. We have a safe in Anchorage with cartons of these things. The cigarette tax on Alaska is 10 cents per cigarette. So a standard 20-pack cigarette package would be $2 per sticker. Those tiny little stickers, they come 15,000 to a roll. So we sell the roll to wholesalers for $30,000. Rolls come 36 in a box, and we have a few boxes in the safe. So if you really want to rob the tax division, we've got some valuable material up there in the Anchorage safe, under lock and key, obviously. So when the tax stamp law was put in place, and I don't know precisely when that was, it was in the 80s or 90s, we created this discount. It's not that we're paying them directly, Mr. Chairman. It's that the tax stamp cost itself, that $2 per sticker, is discounted by between 1% and 3%, depending on the monthly volume of that taxpayer, that they can essentially save, for the larger ones, 2 cents and only pay $1.98 for that $2 stamp to the state. That 1% discount adds up to the $250,000 or so. Roughly speaking, the cigarette tax brings in $22-25 million per year to Alaska. So you can imagine a 1% increment on top of that is the impact of the legislation.
Okay, very good. So I think you might have heard some of the questions. Senator Egan, I believe, had a question about people buying from the tribes, and I don't know, on base, are they stamped on base? I don't know.
I don't know, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know the military rules. I know that there are maritime tax-off stamps, and there's been issues there where you can buy from either on board or you could buy in a port town, say, with the intent of procuring your ship if you're a captain. There's been cases that we've had, criminal cases in Alaska, where we've had to go after someone where those cigarettes were being diverted to use on land, and then they get caught. And we have a criminal investigations unit. We have auditors that our job is to track those guys down and make them pay the tax. Likewise, if you Google cigarettes, you will find that there are any number of online vendors. Some of them might be counterfeit. They might say Marlboro, but they might be made in China. You know, but either way, it's a cigarette, and you can get them shipped to your house for, I want to say, $20-$30 a carton, much cheaper than what you'd find it in the store. Now, that is not inherently illegal, but the person who does that is obligated by importing the cigarettes into the state to pay that excise tax to the state of Alaska. Whether or not there's a criminal penalty, if we catch you, you will be expected to pay what amounts to $20 a carton. And we had one interesting case where we had an extended family where the grandmother was the only one with a credit card, and there were many hundreds of cartons of cigarettes that she was buying for the extended family. And by the time we caught up with them, Grandma owed us like $40,000.
Wow.
That happened over a number of years. So we do our best to track down these things. We get information from other states as far as known cigarette online vendors. We have some subpoena rights to access their customer lists, that kind of thing. It's one of the regular investigatory things that we do. I don't think it's a gargantuan percentage of the overall cigarette market, but it's about deterrence.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Alper and Senator Egan. Additional questions? I guess I have one question for you, Mr. Alper. Maybe this is unfair since it's not your bill, but would you like to see any changes or modifications to this bill?
Mr. Chairman, the elements within the bill itself are fine, and I have no issue. If the committee wished to find some other indirect expenditures, it's a fairly robust volume. In particular, that early filing penalty, I believe there's a comparable language in the motor fuel tax, also $100 a month or something like that. We would not be opposed to squeezing that in there as well. But short of that, every little bit helps. There's a couple of other bills. There's another one that may find its way here that's still in the other body. House Bill 399 eliminates some corporate income tax loopholes that were also identified in the indirect expenditure report. That one's a little bit larger dollar value, $6 or $7 million. So bit by bit, it's important to scoop up the revenue that we're leaving on the table before. Many folks, before they're prepared to add any new taxes, want to make sure we're getting what we can from the taxes we already have.
Well, I appreciate that, and certainly that's the case. Now, what I'm not sure about, though, is this the gambling activities on the cruise ships, and it sounds like that's still kind of a mystery to you as well. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I spoke to the universe of the amount of the tax, $6 million. There's only so many taxpayers because it's only vessels with more than, I think it's 500 passengers. But regardless, most vessels don't have casinos on them unless they're large cruise ships, right? So we're talking, and it's only while they're in state waters. And it's not one that we have massive resources to invest in auditing the time clocks on their casinos. So there's a little bit of trust involved in some of these tax collections. As far as what actually happens with the deduction of federal taxes, not being able to predict, to forecast their federal taxes, it's really hard to predict what the number is, but my guess is, you know, in the low hundred thousands at most. It would be a relatively small increment on top of the existing tax.
Okay, very good. Additional questions? Seeing none, thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there anyone who wanted to testify on this bill, House Bill 96? Okay, I don't show anybody online either. So is there any questions for the sponsor while he's still here? All right, seeing none, then we'll go ahead and close public testimony. And so I think, unless there's some committee discussion, I'd like to hold this bill over and just see if maybe there's some other things that we can do to this. We'll, of course, work with the sponsor. For now, I'd like to hold this and see where we can where it goes. Okay, so with that, thank you, Representative Thompson, and your trusty staff.
Thank you, Chair Meyer, and committee for hearing the bill.
Absolutely. Okay, let's take up the next one, which is the Repeal and Admin Reg Review Committee, House Bill 168. We do have the sponsor here, Representative Schnault, and his trusty staff, Tom Wright. And so if they would join us at the table. It's always good to have the speaker back before. Say that loosely. But Mr. Speaker and staff, it's good to have you in front of the State Affairs Committee. So if you could introduce yourself, and if you need to, you can go through a sectional and try to explain what this bill does to the committee. So the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Representative Mike Schnault, House District 29 on the Kenai Peninsula. House Bill 168 that you have before you today, the purpose of the bill is to repeal the statutes pertaining to the Administrative Regulation Review Committee. According to an analysis that was provided by Ledge Research, which is included in your packets, the ARRC has not overturned any regulations as a result of these committee hearings. Although AS 24.20.445 provides that the committee can suspend regulations for a certain amount of time, the Alaska Supreme Court found in a 1980 case that the legislature has no implied power to veto agency regulations by informal legislative action, and such actions would violate Article 2 of the state constitution. The actions that are available for the ARRC are to introduce legislation to supersede or to nullify regulations. But however, legislative research was not able to find any effort to do so from 2000 to the present. Mr. Chairman, that's basically what the bill does. We can go into the sectional analysis if you would like to. We can go do whatever you would like. But, Mr. Chairman, basically what we're doing is trying to get rid of a committee that we see no real value in. As I stated, it hasn't introduced any legislation committee-wise. In a number of years, even though they've had a number of meetings, no legislation has been introduced. And also, before you've got the House Concurrent Resolution 10, which would just allow and make sure that allows the jurisdiction of standing committees to oversee the proposed or adopted regulations to replace the regulation oversight that is currently under the Administrative Regulation Review Committee. Mr. Chairman, we're open to questions. We can go through the sectional if you would like to. We're here for you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Schnault. I think, well, maybe if you can just highlight the sectional analysis, because I think it's pretty self-explanatory. If you change one section, it changes a bunch of other statutes in the law. But maybe... besides, we'd like to hear from your trusty staff. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Wright, you can put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom Wright, staff to Representative Schnault. Basically, I mean, there are, let me tell you exactly, there are four pages here of repealers, is what it basically amounts to 23 sections. The main section, where we delete the language, for the Admin Reg Review Committee, the main section, Section 3, where it says review of administrative regulations by standing committees of the legislature, and it allows a standing committee of jurisdiction consistent with the legislature's uniform rules, and that's why HCR 10 is in front of you, to review or a proposed or adopted regulation, amendment of a regulation, or repeal of a regulation. And it repeals language stating before the date the regulation scheduled by a department or agency to be adopted, amended, or repealed. And again, the rest of the sections are conforming. Any reference to the Admin Reg Review Committee are deleted.
Okay, very good. And actually, I don't think we've budgeted for this committee anymore, have we, for a while?
Mr. Chairman, I guess through the chairman.
Yeah.
It hasn't been funded. Wasn't funded, I believe, last year. It's not funded this year. Or there isn't any money in the budget yet for this committee.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Chenault. Certainly, I think when the committee was first started, and I'm not sure what the history is on it, it's been around for a while, the intent is good. As we all know, sometimes the regs get written such that it's not really what we intended when we passed the bill. So it's important to have oversight over these regs, but I think what you're proposing here, having it fall under the jurisdiction of standing committees, will work as well. So that's good. So are there questions from the committee? Senator Giesel.
Well, only to make a comment, Mr. Chairman. I served on this committee for 4 years, and certainly that isn't very long in legislative history, but it's true. We never repealed any regulation. There was one incident when a reg package was put up for public comment. I got a lot of public comment and requested the committee meet, and we were able to convince that department not to put out that reg package. But that's something that a legislator can do at any time. We don't need a committee. The other thing that was noteworthy to me is it had a substantial budget appropriation, and even a designated staff who had to follow all these reg packages that came out. So by eliminating it, we did save money, which is a very positive thing.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. You're absolutely right. Mr. Wright.
Mr. Chairman, I remember when I was working in the Speaker's office, we always got a notice from Ledge Legal about regulations that, you know, they may be problematic or not consistent with statute. And I know that I passed those on personally to the Admin Reg Review Committee, and to my knowledge, and I definitely could be wrong, I don't remember any hearings based on what Ledge Legal forwarded to us. So, there has been some oversight. And the other thing is, when you get a regulation that's pretty, I can't think of the right word, I don't want to say ominous, but you get a regulation that, I'll use the airplane tax, for example, where the public will let you know that that's something they don't like, and individual legislators have the right to introduce legislation to repeal that regulation, and that happened in the House with the airplane tax. And now I understand there was a press release today that they're not going forward, the administration isn't going forward with it.
Okay. Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I actually have two bills this session that will repeal regulations. Mr. Wright is absolutely correct. We can certainly carry that kind of legislation as well.
Very good. I wouldn't give him that much credit, though.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Chenault.
We've also done that. We've introduced legislation over the years to repeal statutes that no longer work.
Yes.
So, we think it's a good idea.
Yes, that's right. I think I recall one. One had to do with branding or something. Representative, yeah. Okay, Representative, do you know how long this bill or this committee's been in existence?
I think
it's before my time.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Tom Wright, 2003, 2004.
That's when it was started?
No, it's been in effect since, I think, the 70s, actually, or early 80s.
Wow.
This is just the committees.
Okay.
I think it's been around for quite a while, Mr. Chairman. As I said, we went back as far as 2003, the 23rd legislature, and had legislative research look at it, and since 2003 to current, they had a total of 30 meetings. 15 of them are in one particular year, in 2013-2014, 28th legislature. But all the rest are between 2 and 5 meetings a year is what they had.
Okay, very good. Is there any other questions at this time? And I don't see anyone online to testify, so we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Of course, it has a zero fiscal note. I think we captured the savings on this actually last year. So, so if there's no other comments, questions from the committee, Senator Giesel, are you okay with doing a motion to move?
I'd be delighted. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill number 168, version 30LS0682/alpha from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Okay. Seeing here no objections, then that bill and resolution will pass committee, and with that, we'll stand at ease. Great. Okay, State Affairs will come back to order, and we did just make a motion. There was no objection to moving House Bill 168, the repeal of Admin Reg Review Committee, and now we will take up the corresponding House Concurrent Resolution 10, which deals with the uniform rules dealing with regulation review. Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Concurrent Resolution number 10, version 30LS0683/alpha, from committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Okay, I think I'm jumping the gun on that one, too. Was there any testimony on that before we move it out of committee? Okay, I didn't think so. And the fiscal notes, of course, are zero. So we have a motion. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing and hearing no objection, then that concurrent resolution will pass with the bill. With that, we'll stand at ease. All right, we're going to bring the Senate State Affairs back to order. We do have the next bill before us is House Bill 20, Solemnized Marriage Elected Officials. We have the bill sponsor here as well as his trusty staff, Sarah Perman. Representative Klayman, this is your bill. If you could introduce yourself to the committee, explain the bill. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Matt Klayman, Alaska State Representative for House District 21 in West Anchorage. I want to thank each of the members of the Senate State Affairs Committee for hearing House Bill 20 today. In financially challenging times like we face, I'm reminded that part of our role as elected officials is to reduce red tape and make government accessible to the public. In introducing this bill, I'd like to make marriage more easily accessible. The bill will allow couples to have their marriage solemnized directly by elected officials. It allows those of us in public office, and it's actually not just legislators, but mayors and school board members, anyone that's been elected to public office, allow us to perform the marriages without making them go down to the courthouse and get a marriage commissioner's license. It will allow us to be the friendly face of government while providing a service to the public. And I think that being able to perform a marriage would be a privilege, and we would be fortunate to have that opportunity from time to time. In addition, the bill puts into statute the constitutional principle that religious figures and others cannot be compelled to perform a marriage ceremony. And with that, I will turn it over to my staff member, Sarah Perman, to explain the bill further.
All right. Ms. Perman, the floor is yours.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Sarah Perman, and I'm a staff for Representative Klayman. House Bill 20 amends Alaska Marriage Code to add language that allows for marriages to be solemnized by elected officials of the state of Alaska. Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 2505-261A relating to who may solemnize a marriage. Currently, the statute only allows for marriage solemnization by a religious official, which includes ministers, priests, rabbis, or commissioned officers of the Salvation Army, a marriage commissioner or judicial officer, or before or in any religious organization or congregation. House Bill 20 adds language to add to the list an individual holding an elective public office in the state. Section 2 adds a new subsection to the same statute that says no religious official, organization, or elected official that is authorized to perform marriages is obligated to do so. Alaska Statute 2505-281, which allows marriages solemnized by an unauthorized person professing to be authorized to be considered valid, is amended in Section 3 to include language that reads that marriages solemnized by an elected official is considered valid, or someone professing to be an elected official. The purpose of this bill is to make marriage accessible to all Alaskans. We recognize that marriage opens doors for many people. There are over 1,100 places in federal laws and programs where being married expands an individual's opportunities. Examples include access to health care for one's spouse or having eligibility for family medical leave. Frankly, we believe that this bill is a family-first bill that allows people to receive greater benefits that are good for all Alaskans. Additionally, House Bill 20 allows elected officials to be good stewards of government. It allows elective officials to interact on a one-on-one basis with constituents, providing a service that has a lasting impact in constituents' lives. Whereas couples can currently have anyone solemnize marriage through a marriage commissioner appointment, there's a $25 fee and the process can be time-consuming. Having an elected official available provides a simplified, cost-free outlet. This amendment may also apply to couples who may not be affiliated with a particular religious organization. They would be able to have an elected official perform their wedding without having to go through the process of arranging for a marriage commissioner appointment. In smaller towns or rural areas with limited resources, this change provides one more outlet for marriage solemnization. For example, if a couple in a remote Alaska village are set to be married and the minister becomes ill, the mayor could step in on short notice. With that, I'll stress that nothing in this bill mandates that elected officials must solemnize marriage, and I'll also note that the Department of Health and Social Services has assigned a zero fiscal note to this bill. This bill actually removes an expense to citizens who would otherwise pay a $25 fee for marriage commissioner appointment. With that, Mr. Chair, I would be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Senator Coghill has a question.
So I've been a commissioner where I went and got the paperwork. the required forms are still going to be something that would be required of the elected officials that would be given to us by the vital stats people.
Through the chair, Senator Cock, you'll actually know that it would be similar to others that are identified that can perform measures, such as a Salvation Army officer, just by role of being that person, mm-hmm. they can perform wedding ceremonies. So that's part of the point, is that somebody could call up, somebody in your community could say, Senator Coghill, what are you doing on Saturday afternoon? If you're available, you could just show up and perform the ceremony, or if you didn't want to perform the ceremony, you could say, I'm in a
There still has to be a documentation, and that's kind of what I was getting at. How is the documentation formulated? Is that at will? Is that something that an individual office would have to design? Is that required under a certain form?
The marriage license itself, that when right. somebody gets married now, somebody that has a marriage commissioner license or a judge or a minister would actually sign the form that the marriage license, saying this is the day they got married. And this
that would be up to the couple. I'm taking it. Okay.
Right, but the signature would come from the elected official, and they'd indicate who they are.
Mr. Chairman, obviously I haven't done this very much,
but
I just wanted to know how that practically played out as far as signing the solemnization. Actually, it would be the license document, wouldn't it be? Mm-hmm. That's something that they apply for.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
And through the chair, this wouldn't remove the need for a couple to get a marriage license.
Right. Got it. Okay. I'll wake up any moment.
No, that's your line of questioning is good. That's kind of where I was going too, is that, we can, if I may, we could perform marriages now, correct, without even passing this bill.
Through the chair, Mr. Chair, that's correct, but you would have to go and stand in line to get the license, or you'd have to have the couple stand in line at the courthouse to get the license. Interestingly enough, I was contacted by a member of the community that has a very busy schedule and was asked to perform a marriage for one of his employees, and he agreed, and he ended up having to go down to the courthouse on three successive mornings because the line was such that each time he had meetings that he would get in line, and then the line would be too long, and then he'd have to go back to work and then try the next morning. And after three efforts, he finally got through the line and got the license to be a commissioner, and then as a commissioner, he would then have authority under that three-day commission license to sign the paper.
Gotcha. Representative Clayman, is this something that can be done online, though, now?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. I think Ms. Mead is here from the court system. She might be able to answer that.
In fact, I have an email here from Nancy Mead. This was asked in a previous committee. You asked whether the marriage commissioner applicant must be physically at the court counter to get an appointment order. No. This may vary by court location, but in Anchorage and Juneau, for example, I learned that they even process applications that they receive in the mail if signed. And the couple can bring the signed form without the commissioner applicant present. I believe that's true for nearly all Alaska courts.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So can former legislators, mayors, assembly, school board members perform, or is this just current elected?
Mr. Chair, the proposal would be only people that are currently serving.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Clayman. And then I'm assuming, too, this would only pertain to the state of Alaska. I couldn't go to Oregon and marry somebody down here. Representative Clayman. Okay. All right. Just checking. Okay. Interesting bill. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. Representative Clayman, can you walk me through the discussion upon why, in version Che was amended to delete the language about an individual holding elective public office may refuse to solemnize a marriage for any reason, and why that was replaced with the current language that's in the bill in section 2.
Thank you. confused. So, can you ask the question again? Because you're looking at the D version first.
Yeah, I guess it's the question is the conversation on your CS for explanation of changes. That last paragraph.
Thank you. Oh, okay.
Okay. Did you find it, Representative Clayman?
The Section 2 in the O version of the bill. We're looking at the same one?
Yes.
Okay. This Section 2 is specifically to clarify that one, three of the four categories of individuals can't be compelled to perform a marriage. The only individual who could be compelled to perform a marriage would be members of the judiciary, and they recognize that that's part of their job.
Go ahead, Senator Wilson. I guess my question is why the change of the language from the previous version to this version, if you could walk me through a little bit of that discussion of why that change was recommended. I believe the other language
okay,
was...
Okay, so you're looking at subparagraph. You're looking at subparagraph 4. On page 2 of the D version?
Yeah.
Please. So the difference is on subparagraph 4 that the ability to decline to perform a marriage would have only applied to elected officials. And so the committee substitute that's in version O would now apply to ministers, priests, rabbis, religious congregations under subparagraph 3, and then elected officials under subparagraph 4. So the final version of the bill actually expands the group of people who can decline to perform a marriage for whatever reason.
Go ahead, Senator Wilson.
I guess my question is, I don't have a plan, but let's say I have a old friend I want to go ahead and, or a mayor of Wasilla wants to open up his marriage license business and starts to perform, ceremonies in City Hall, and all elected officials, City Council wants to do this, and thus they have a set business. Can they then, under this, let's say, choose for their own religious reasons in the previous versions, say, no, I don't want to marry you guys, I don't want to do same-sex marriages, I don't want to do, those type of marriages, or I want to decline certain individuals. Does that still give them the same protection under this statute as it did in the previous statute?
Go ahead, Representative Clayman.
And I see it. Oh, sorry. Okay.
through the chair, Representative Wilson, it's a two-part answer. If the mayor went in the business, as you described, of performing marriages in City Hall, then I think you'd have issues about public access to City Hall. And so in that specific instance, I think you might run into a more complicated question. On the other hand, if the mayor was performing marriages in his backyard and he had a nice garden and was doing it in his garden and it wasn't a public facility in any way, then that would this statute would allow the mayor to say, I'm not going to marry a gay couple, I'm not going to marry an interracial couple, I'm not going to marry whoever that... He could make that choice, but I think if it's going on in City Hall, then I think you have a little different question.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson, and that does sound like a good judiciary question. So I noticed the bill goes to judiciary next, but certainly I want my committee members on state affairs to feel comfortable with the bill. I guess Representative Clayman, my overall first opinion of this was that it's definitely an honor and a privilege to be an elected official and have people trust us to vote on their behalf. And so I almost think this is putting us now in a different class than other folks, because now we don't have to stand in line. We don't have to, go to the web and pay the fee and all that. Are we kind of elevating ourselves in status by doing something like this?
Mr. Chair, I don't think so, because I think I've heard from people more than once saying that it would be nice if you could call up your elected official and they could, so much for the time they say, what are we doing for you? And you like say, well, I go to and I look at these bills and I have constituent meetings and stuff, and
and I've heard from a number of constituents that said they wouldn't think about elevating ourselves at all. They elect us to do a job, and if we're available on a Saturday afternoon, they think it would be nice that we could come down and they wouldn't have to pay for our quality, they wouldn't have to wait in line, they wouldn't have to ask us to wait in line, they could just have us come down and perform that service as part of our public service.
I wonder what that says about me. No one's asked me to marry him, so.
You're lucky.
Yeah, maybe so.
If you're any better, no one's asked me either.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Senator Wilson.
I guess that asked the question upon sort of private entities or profiting upon our elected officials. Has this gone sort of through the ethics process to make sure that, is this something that elected officials can get paid for to offer marital services as their elected officials and roles? I just didn't know if that has gone through the ethics or review in that process.
Representative Klayman. Representative Klayman, go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the topic of one getting paid never crossed my mind. So this bill certainly doesn't authorize a person to get paid for it. I think that would raise a question about if somebody were getting paid, that might raise a question about whether there are ethics issues related to it. I personally, if somebody invited me, or Senator Meyer, he and I, who never get asked to do these things, I think if somebody asked me, I wouldn't even think for a minute of getting paid. So it's, but I suspect to the extent that somebody did want to get paid, that would need to go through ethics analysis.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good question, Senator Wilson. I was under the same impression that we would obviously do this for free if someone is has enough trust and respect in us to ask us to marry them. And as Senator Egan said, maybe we take a piece of cake or something, but
yeah,
that'd be about it. Go ahead, Senator Egan.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just Rep. Klayman, I've done three, and the payment was half a glass of champagne and a piece of birthday or wedding cake, and one's working fine, two are toast. No, sorry.
Okay. Did you get to dance with the bride too, Senator Egan? I'm going too far here. Okay. Any other questions from the committee members? Okay. So let's see. Thank you, Representative Klayman. Follow the script. Public testimony. Is there anybody online to testify? Don't see anybody. And I don't see anybody here in the audience. Zero fiscal notes. It looks like you did have a change of opinion from the Alaska Family Council. Is that because of the amendment that Senator Wilson was talking about, or what? How did that happen? Go ahead.
Yeah, through the to the chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay, very good. Yeah, since there isn't anyone online to testify, I'm looking through the emails and letters that are included in the package, and it looks like everybody is supportive and has a zero fiscal note. And I'm sure Senator Coghill next to me will dive deeper into some of the legal issues that were brought. So if there's no further discussion on this, then Senator Giesel.
Close public testimony.
Oh, thank you. I'm out of practice. Close public testimony is closed.
I'll let you chair resources, Mark.
Yeah. I didn't do much better there. Okay, so then any final comments or discussion? Okay, seeing none. Then, now, Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee substitute for House Bill number 20, version 30LS0242/Omega, from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Okay, seeing and hearing no objection, then we will go ahead and move House Bill 20 out of committee. Thank you, Representative Klayman and Sarah, for joining us today. I think we're out of time, so we're going to hold over House Bill 152. I see Kendra is here, so we'll take that up on Thursday. Right, okay. And Do committee members have anything else they want to bring up at this time? Okay, if not, then what? Oh, Senator Wilson. Sorry.
I can do it offline.
Okay. Okay, if there's nothing to come before the committee at this time, our next meeting is Thursday, April 5th, and we'll be taking up Senate Bill 159, which is the PERS, TERS distributions. It's the governor's bill. And then House Bill 47 is municipal PERS. And then we'll take up the House Bill 152 that we didn't get to. Okay, with that, we are now adjourned. It's 5:05.